On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are replaying an interview that we did right after COVID began with Charles Jurvinski, who passed away today. It is an interview where he talks a lot about why he gives, and it's a really interesting look at the local legend who, as I say, unfortunately, we lost today. We're also going to be talking about, speaking of losing on a much less serious note, Canada's men's hockey team at the Olympics. Yeah, they're out. They lost. We'll talk about that. And we're going to be talking about, well, the Olympics, but also the amount of money involved in those streaming services now, how much they have to pay for content. It's a business story. It'll blow your mind when you hear how much it is. Stick with us.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
You know, that song could have actually been the theme song when Charles Jurvinski would walk into a room, because he did that all the time. He gave it away. He was a wealthy, wealthy man, had done very well in business, but time and time and time again with his wife, Margaret, he gave his money away, huge amounts towards health and other things. Well, he passed away, as you probably heard, today at 91. His wife says he had not been in great health, but it's still a surprise because it was just on Monday that they had made another $5.1 million donation. But I wanted to play this. We don't do this often, but we talked to Charles Jurvinski on the show here in April of 2020. It was just weeks after COVID had landed and things were beginning to get a little scary and we didn't really know what was coming. And in typical fashion, Charles Jurvinski and his wife Margaret donated $3.3 million that day to COVID issues, to help people with COVID at local hospitals. Here was our chat with Charles Jurvinski. This week we had it was the biggest donation, no question about it. The Jurvinskis, Charles and Margaret, you know them well, you know their name certainly. They donated $3.3 million towards fighting COVID. It's a staggering sum of money. And it is a huge act of generosity, and it only seems right to bring Charles Jurvinski on the air tonight. Mr. Jurvinski, thanks for doing this today. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's our pleasure.
Not everybody, obviously, is going to have the chance to talk to you in person or to meet you in person, and so let me presume to speak for them when I say thank you for this. This is incredibly generous.
Thank you, and you're welcome. We'll try to put in more next year.
Well, hopefully we don't have a COVID situation to deal with still next year, but I get your point. Tell me about the conversation that you and Margaret had when you sat down and decided to do this.
Well, I'm sure people have heard this before, but I have to go back to our career at Flamborough Downs. The community, our community, the surrounding community supported us well at Flamborough Downs. And after the sale of Flamborough Downs, we were gifted with a great deal of money. And we had a discussion. We've just got to say thank you to the public at large that supported us. And it seemed that healthcare and donations to healthcare was the way to go. So it was a no-brainer, and that's what we did, and we're delighted that we did what we did.
When you decided years ago to start putting it towards medical, there was no personal incident or some time when you or Margaret were in the hospital and got special treatment and said we have to do it? It was just a decision that that's where the money should go?
Scott, I don't even like to talk about it, because on the contrary, okay, I was stricken with cancer going back almost 20 years ago, didn't come into it at all. The cancer has debilitated me personally, but I don't have any umbrage in any way, shape, or form against health care. That's life in general. And quite frankly, I get a kick out of it, because Margaret and I, if you slap us in the face, we'll give you the other side of the face, so you can slap us on the other side, but you're still our friend.
I'm hoping no one's done that. No one's taken advantage of that offer, I hope. You don't deserve that, for sure.
Well, not lately.
Well, good news. Where did the ability to give come from? Because I don't know that everybody... Well, I think everyone has the ability. I don't know if everyone knows how or wants to.
Well, I think it probably stems from... Hello, are you there?
I am still here.
Okay. It stems from our background being a Depression baby, poverty poor, both of us, lack of you name it, we had it. And I think that would have been the umbilical cord. And when we got in the position that we are in, where we could give, then it was just a natural thing to do it because, well, say $3.3 million at this point in time, probably buy you about 12 Rolls Royces at least. What the hell would we do with 12 Rolls Royces? Okay, you can't drive them all. But in this case, giving back, and especially to healthcare, with the professionals that we have and the working staff and the background that we have in healthcare in Hamilton, it's unnatural. And here's the beautiful part about the whole thing. When I walk the streets, when we're available, or wherever I go, everybody that we look at, we know we are there touching their lives in some way through healthcare, because sooner or later, everybody gets sick.
That's true.
Now,
that is true.
How can you have a better feeling than, say, I'm talking to you, Scott, how can you get a better feeling that I know someplace along the line we're giving you a hand or helping you?
It's a great feeling.
It's a great point.
Can I ask an indelicate follow-up question then? Is it because you've been, as you say, you've been poor and now you are wealthy? Is it harder or easier to give when you've got a fair amount of money?
Well, I think it's a hell of a lot easier when you've got it because, for instance, a lot of people give, and you've heard me say before, at least others have, nickels, dimes, and quarters make dollars. Now, it doesn't matter how much, but if everybody gives a little bit with what they can afford, and if they can't, they can't, because they have to look after themselves to begin with. But if there's a little bit left over, there's no greater feeling than helping your fellow man. Now, and I want to draw another illustration.
Sure.
I can remember the first time I put a quarter into Salvation Army's kettle at Christmas. I did it, and I felt real good. I was a paper boy at that time and shined shoes, but hey, I was getting tips. I put a quarter in the bucket and felt good. And I guarantee you that anybody that gives in any way, shape, or form, doesn't matter how much, how little, or what they do for their fellow man, it makes them feel good.
And, you know, my question, some people are probably sitting at home going, what a dumb question, Radley, because of course it's easier to give when you have more money. And I understand, like, technically it is, but I mean, we all know that statement that Rockefeller made once upon a time when they said, how much is enough? And he says, just a little bit more. And I mean, I think it must be hard at times for some people, no matter how much they have, they always think, well, I just need a little bit more. I don't want to give it away.
Well, and incidentally, while I'm watching you, we're just appearing on CHCH, and I'm holding this against you because I don't know what I'm saying on television. Anyhow, I'll tell you, just a little bit more, what we're doing in our lifetime, currently speaking, everything I do with reference to our investments, etc., I am looking for a little bit more, because I really want to see us make this thing work, and I'm talking about healthcare and donating to healthcare. And maybe it's hard for people to understand or whatever it is. My total thrust, our total thrust, Margaret and myself, is to make as much money as we can currently in our investments to give it to healthcare.
It's a beautiful sentiment. Just before I let you go, on a totally unrelated topic, and it's a little silly, I guess, based on the serious topic that we're having, but I've always wanted to ask you this. There is a statue of you and Margaret in the front lobby of the Jurovinsky Hospital. How close did they get, do you think, to catching you in that moment?
If you're talking about the appearance.
Yeah, how close did they come? How do you excellent, do you like it? You love it.
Excellent, excellent. And I will tell you, that was one of the embarrassments of our life, because how many people have a sculpture in their honor? And there again, healthcare, by virtue of a $10 million donation that we did on behalf of the former Nora Frances Henderson Hospital that is now called the Juravinsky Hospital and Cancer Center. When the board insisted on doing that, and of course we said, no way. Well, in retrospect, we're proud of that now. And how many people have a sculpture in bronze while they're alive?
Not many. Not many.
I can tell you stories about that that just absolutely blows me away with reference to that statue.
Well, we'll have to do that another day, because sadly I'm out of time right now. But
I'm glad you are, because we're on CHCH TV and I want to hear what we said.
You go. Thank you again for your donation. Really, on behalf of everyone, thank you.
Everybody out there that's listening, whatever you can, please help now. Stay safe and listen to our professionals. Be safe. Don't get this scourge.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Oh, he doesn't need an introduction. Let me bring in Steve Foxcroft, who is a sports commentator. He does all kinds of stuff. Steve, who needs an introduction when we're just going to be talking about Canada's men's hockey team doing the...
Can I throw an audible? Like,
please.
We're sports guys. Can I throw an audible because of the Charles Juravinsky thing?
Yes.
Can I just talk about him for a second? Because, like, I grew up close to that family with, on my mom's side, my aunt and uncles lived next door, or in Greensville. Next door is, you know, a little bit away, but I grew up sort of going by and seeing him. And of course, Charles was a recognizable guy, eh? Like, he dressed flamboyantly and he owned a racetrack. Like, well, as a young boy growing up, I remember driving through Dundas with my dad, and there would be Charles in his white pickup truck with Wilcher Construction on the side door. And we always knew what the char for Charles was, but I think it was his business partner, Bill McCain. And so that was probably the William for Bill, right? And just admired Charles and Margaret from afar. And
well, yeah,
sort of a larger than life guy, you know.
He is, and it's sad because we lost David Braley not that long ago, who was a great benefactor and philanthropist for the city of Hamilton, and now Charles Juravinsky.
Ron Joyce, guys, names are on buildings, you know.
Of course. Steve, you know whose name is not going to be on a building? Anybody from Team Canada, from the men's hockey team.
That's right.
And I'm sorry. I understand that these are not our top guys. And I understand that, you know, our best NHL players are at home. And I understand all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. Maybe it's unfair. I still kind of expect we're going to do better in the quarterfinals.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's like, lacrosse is the national sport in some people's minds, but hockey is the true national sport for us. And we should be able to throw our jerseys out there and win, right? And it's heartbreaking. It's just tough. It's tough to swallow because the world, like, it's like the Americans in basketball a little bit. The world does catch up, but you're still the best when it comes down to it. And you got to do it at this level too, even with your, like, everyone's sending their scrubs, right? Everyone's sending their...
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. If we lost, if it was our, you know, guys who aren't NHL players, essentially, if it was our guys playing against Sweden's best team and all the best Swedes in the world were there, I would say, no problem, I get it, right? But this is Sweden's best players are in the NHL.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's, so they're in the same position we are. I don't know. I just, as I say, unfortunately, it's disappointing. Now, the flip side is that tonight at 11:10 p.m. our time, Canada goes for gold against the States in women's hockey, which, you know, there's a chance there for things to be much, much better. Maybe we'll forget all about the men's team once the women finish their game. Let's hope, because if, and I hate to, you know, but if the women lose, then it's a complete disaster for hockey for Canada across the board. If the women win, I don't think anyone even thinks about the men because it wasn't the NHL guys.
Yeah, but it's also not comparable in my eyes because with the women, it's all hands on deck for everybody. So it's kind of going like the chalk, right? Because the professional women, there is no real, the women's side isn't playing somewhere else professionally. They're sending their best on each side. So to me, it's like a legit competition. But on the men's side, it is different. It's tough. And is it a commentary on us as a nation in how we're changing and how maybe multiculturalism is changing us? And because we can talk about maybe tennis is our national sport now, you know,
or basketball or soccer, yeah. Or like we're doing better in those. Now, again, I think that's probably a little unfair because I think if our NHL players were there, I would be very, very hard pressed to believe that we'd be in the same situation we are right now. Look, hockey is hockey. Modern hockey is modern hockey. You run into a hot goalie like we did against Dominik Hasek. Like Canada did against Dominik Hasek.
Yeah.
In was it Nagano where that happened? I think. Anything can happen, but I think we'd be better off.
You know, the other thing too, and then I'm getting with best against best or whatever, home ice seems to come into play. Because when you look at it, remember when Gretzky, and you, that might be the one, right? Remember we didn't even use Gretzky in the shootout? I think it was Coach Mark Crawford who didn't
it
use
was.
Gretzky in the shootout. And
it was.
What the heck were we thinking? But, you know, we were halfway around the world playing in that one. But then when we're on home ice, that's when the Canadians and the Americans, you know, face off against one another. We seem to do well in.
Do you remember who, instead of Gretzky, do you remember who took the last shot in the shootout for Canada that time?
I don't. You gotta tell me.
It's Brendan Shanahan who went in and shot it right. It didn't even take a shot. He slid it right into Dominik Hasek's pads. It's like he didn't even want to be there. But anyway,
and we were all at the time though too when it happened. We're all still freaking out as to why Gretzky is still sitting on the bench.
And, you know, so Wayne Gretzky was always known as not being a great penalty shot or breakaway guy. But you want to know something? If you're going to go down, you've got the greatest offensive player in the history of the game on the bench. Go down with him. Yeah. If you're going to lose, go down with the guy with your, don't leave your best bullet in the gun. Go down with your best guy. And if he messes up, he messes up.
And
but you
do
live
you
with
think
it.
The goalie's going to sit there and think that? Like, oh, he's no good at penalty shots. So, like, as soon as Gretzky comes over the boards to circle around and take the puck, you know the goalie is just going to be going, oh, my gosh, what am I in for here?
Yeah, yeah, it's right. Dominik Hasek was not seeing Gretzky come over the boards. We didn't go, oh, goody, he stinks at breakaways.
Yeah.
No, that's not happening. All right, we got to run, but I got a quick question for you really quickly. Happy Gilmore, the movie, one of the all-time great sports movies, turns 26 years old today. So if Shooter McGavin, the bad guy in that movie, is among the great sports movie villains, who's your best sports movie villain of all time?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Sports movie villain, I'd probably go with something like, and this is sort of Adam Sandler too, but The Longest Yard. Remember that one?
Yes. Yep.
And it was kind of like in that case, it's kind of like the whole guard, like the guards against the cons, right? So I picked all the guards in that one and make them my best movie villains because that was a great one. And hey, Shooter McGavin, by the way, big Bills fan.
He is. Yep, he is. Yeah, I'll go with Ogie Oglethorpe from Slapshot, who I still think with a close second to Dr. Hook McCracken. But you know what? As you start to think about it, there are some great ones out there. Ivan Drago from Rocky IV, Mr. Clubber Lang from Rocky III.
Right.
The guy, what was the guy's name in The Karate Kid? The blonde kid. Anyway. Oh. And the other one that jumps to mind always is, what is her name? She was the owner of the Cleveland Indians in Major League.
Right. Right, who didn't want them to do anything, didn't want them to do well.
Right, right. Yeah, it's There's the discussion. Send me an email, Radley.
The Bad News Bears against themselves.
There you go. There's tons of them. Radley at 900CHML.com. Who would be your all-time sports movie villain? Let me hear from you. Steve Foxcroft, thanks for the time today. Thanks for the story about Charles Jervinski as well. Thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900CHML.
There is a good chance that at some point, well, maybe not a good chance. I was going to say there's a good chance that at some point in the last week or so and through this week that you have watched some of the Olympics. And I guess I should catch myself because I'm not sure that that is as true as it maybe once was. Because if you're in the States picking us up, and we know we have people who listen down in the States and they call us and they tell us that at times, TV numbers on NBC, awful. Just NBC is getting slaughtered on this. And here in Canada, I believe, and I'll bring in my next guest and he can help me out with this one, but everything I've read so far, ratings are down in Canada as well. Bill Brioux is a fantastic TV writer. He's with Brioux TV. You can read him online. Love having him here. Bill, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. Scott, how are you doing?
I am terrific, thanks. Am I better than CBC's bean counters? What are they having a little bit of an aneurysm these days because of the ratings?
Well, I've seen the numbers for the first 5 days through the first weekend of the Olympics for Canada. And CBC was down about 25% from the games 4 years ago, the Winter Games in Pyeongchang. And NBC was down about 43%. So the decline was steeper in the U.S. Having said that, I mean, they got about 950,000 for the opening ceremonies rebroadcast. And that didn't even make the Canadian top 15 that week in terms of all shows, you know, the highest rated. So it certainly isn't the big event that other Olympics have been in the past. It's a decent bump for CBC, but it hasn't been a real ratings grabber.
See, one of the things, and you just touched on it, and I'm glad you did, one of the things that has always been thrown out there is, well, if numbers are down, it's going to be because of the time difference. And look, there's no question that 13-hour time difference is a nightmare for programmers. That's abundantly clear. But as you pointed out, it's 25% down from what was basically the same time difference or very close to it 4 years ago. So I don't think you can entirely blame this on that.
No, it's not the time difference at all, I don't think. The last three Olympics, you know, the summer games were in Tokyo. So viewers are used to it. They've almost trained now to watch in prime time, and even if they've heard the outcome, they might watch anyway just to see how it turned out. So I don't think that's the problem here. The other way, there's a lot of factors, Scott. One is TV in general is down. Broadcast TV in those 4 years has changed dramatically. You've got all these new streaming services, Disney Plus, Amazon, and of course Netflix has been around for a long time, but people have all kinds of options now. So if you don't want to watch the Olympics, there's other things on. The other thing is the medal counts are down. Canada's got 3 golds now, but past years we've had like 10, 12. So, and in the U.S., they haven't been, especially at the beginning, they didn't do very well. That didn't help. People didn't get in the habit of watching, and you don't have a home rooting interest, you don't watch. So I think that's it. And then the other factor, I think, honest, Scott, is China. I think there's a reluctance for a lot of people. They're like, I'm boycotting these games because of the two Michaels, or, you know, in the U.S. because of a lot of abuses in terms of human rights, and you know, and even the whole tension with Russia, and you know, it just seems like these games, there's a pall cast over them politically.
What we've heard in past Olympics when numbers have been down, or even in things like the Oscars or the Emmys or Grammys or whatever, is, well, yeah, TV, as you just pointed out, Bill, TV is all down a bit because people have cut the cord. But have we seen any numbers yet that would suggest, yeah, the TV, the broadcast numbers are down, but the streaming numbers are way, way through the roof and have compensated for the lost people? Do we know that?
No, unfortunately, the streaming services do not share their numbers. They all they tell you is their subscriptions are up. So, you know, subscriptions for Disney Plus are up, for Even Netflix and subscriptions are up, even though not as robust and not as, they haven't accelerated like in the past because other services, Paramount Plus and Apple and everything else. But so we don't know that 1 million, 2 million, 3 million a night are watching, something else on a streaming service. I just think there's not the same passion for these games. The other thing is there's a bit of Olympic burnout. You know, Tokyo was just 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, the Olympics again. And we're used to waiting every 4 years. And now that's happening. Look, you know, the Canadian men's hockey team just eliminated today. That's a reason for Canadians to come back to the games in mass droves. And that's, that carrot won't be there.
And worse, not from a results thing, because we're certainly hoping the women do well tonight. They're playing in the gold medal game. But having the Olympic women's gold medal championship game starting at 11:10 on a Wednesday night, I mean, I suppose they could have started at 2 in the morning to make it worse. But you're trying hard to find a worse time to have a hockey game that really matters that people might stay up and watch than that.
Yeah, it is, though. I know when Team Canada played the U.S. last Wednesday, I think, the game started late again. It was about the same time, and they did. CBC showed like at after midnight, over 1 million people were watching. So people will tune in and stay up to see what they want to see. But
yeah, but that was 1 million, Bill. But if it was at 7 o'clock, I bet you get 3 million or 4 million.
Yeah, can't argue with that. And back in Vancouver in 2010, when the men's won the gold, I mean, that broke all records. I don't know, it was 16 million or it was just an incredible, the all-time high in Canada for anything ever. So, yeah, it's not the same for a variety of reasons. And, it's certainly down.
Let me ask you personally, because I love the Olympics. I love sports. I will freely admit I have felt a malaise about these games, and you cited a bunch of different reasons. I don't really know which one it is. I haven't really identified, just I don't have the same level of enthusiasm for these, and I don't know why. Do you share that, or are you still totally tuned in on this one?
No, I do share that. And there was an article before the games began in, I don't know if it was the New Yorker, but it was about NBC, and the article argued that this was the perfect storm against NBC, and for all these reasons, political and otherwise. But I think, yeah, the other one is just because it's happening in China and COVID, and you can't, you know, people are so sick of wearing masks and not being able to go out, and they're dying to see something and be distracted from the pandemic. And they turn on the Olympics, and they're watching athletes mask up right after they skate or literally wearing masks playing hockey. And they're thinking, oh, I was trying to get away from this. And
yes, I agree.
That is hurt as well.
One more thing on this one, and this is a U.S. thing, but Washington Post had, the Washington Post had a story today. The headline is NBC is nearly mum on China abuses in its wall-to-wall Olympic coverage. And then the subhead, did networks avoid mentions of diplomatic boycotts, human rights abuses, and questions about the host nation as it seeks to build an audience? Even the Washington Post, which, I don't know if you would normally see this, but kind of teeing off on a media opponent, a media, you know, whatever, but saying where's the balance on this one? And look, I kind of get where NBC is coming from. You've paid billions of dollars. You don't want to say, hey, look at us, and by the way, plug your nose while you do. but there's I think there's something to be said for what the Washington Post is saying here, that yeah, but you have to kind of talk about it a little, don't you?
I think the problem was that when they started the games, the opening ceremonies, NBC had Mike Tirico. He's sort of the Olympic host, and he was literally the opening ceremonies hadn't even started, and he was flanked by these two academics, and they were there literally, and they were supposed to be there for the whole duration to talk about China, and they covered, they've been in China before, and they were talked about the human rights violations, and they were very specific, and you watch that, and it was grim. NBC, and even they'd have their correspondent back home in America from the Today Show, Samantha Guthrie, saying, wow, China's bad, isn't it? And these two experts were nodding and tisking. And then they were like, okay, now it's time for the ceremonies. And I think it was like they kind of shot themselves in the foot by doing that, because they set it up. I guess they felt they had this obligation to tell that story. But in doing so at that point, they basically said, well, you can watch if you want, but you know, we understand if you don't want to. We have experts here to explain that.
Yeah, it becomes tough to pivot.
It is tough to pivot. And they were introduced to audiences by saying, these two will be with us through the whole games. I haven't seen them again.
I'm laughing. I probably shouldn't be laughing. They may be in like a Uyghur camp somewhere. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know how – it is a tough spot for NBC, because I don't know how you try to be upbeat and tell a happy story and try and get people feeling good while you're telling the story of the other part of it too, which, I mean, I almost think that they would have been better to have more of their news division there to handle that stuff, but at least be doing it. You know, we don't even have to do it on our Olympic broadcast, but we're going to give you a complete breakdown of it on the NBC News. But, you know, these divisions sort of overlap and they don't want to get in each other's way.
And that's another handicap for CBC and NBC, is they don't have the boots on the ground. Like in other games, they would have many more people there who would be interviewing people, and you'd get these human interest stories and behind the scenes, and then they would talk to their parents. And now you had a games where the parents can't go. The people that are interviewing them, they're using the feed from China for the images. They do have some moments where they can get a microphone on the end of a hockey stick and try to talk to somebody, but it's different. And that separation is working against NBC's usually very personal coverage of these games, and for CBC as well.
All right, let me switch up a little bit. One other thing I want to ask you about, because I watched and I don't often watch those, people can tune in and watch those financial shows on the American, and it's like, what's the one with Kramer? And, you know, like, it's not thing really, but I happened to see this interview, and I was fascinated by it because of the numbers. And it was a guy, and I don't know who he is. He's an expert in the field, I guess. And he was talking about the streaming services, specifically with Netflix, but he was talking about the streaming services and how much money they are going to have to, going forward, invest in content in order to stay relevant and hold on to their subscribers. And Bill, I mean, you know some of the numbers. It was mind-blowing how much money we're talking about here.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, Netflix for years have had this big head start, and the advantage, you know, that kept them number one, their market share was, you know, like 80%, 90%. Now it's down less than half because they're competing against Warner Brothers and Disney and Paramount and Apple and you name it. They all have their own services and streaming services around the world. And so in order to keep ahead, Netflix they used to spend $11 billion on content. The budget now is $17 billion. Put that in perspective. People in Canada go crazy because CBC gets $1 billion. 1.1 or something for all their English and French radio and television services. So there's one company spending $17 billion on content. And yeah, it's a crazy amount of money.
Well, and it's because, I guess, once upon a time, as you say, with the head start, once upon a time before, I mean, look, credit to Netflix for being genius about this, but before any of the other networks or anyone else realized there was value in those old shows, they bought the rights to them for like 10 or 15 years for dollars and not very much. And suddenly they've got this enormous cache of old shows that suddenly people are interested in. And then they start adding movies and stuff. Well, now that everybody has decided, well, why am I selling those or renting those to Netflix? Those are good quality content for art. You now can't fill up your streaming service just with those old shows, those old comfort food shows that people want to tune into. You have to find your own stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, Warner Brothers would sell Netflix Friends for years. It was like just a magnet for viewers. It never was an evergreen. It always paid a dividend. People kept coming back. New generations would find it. Then Warner's launched the HBO Max network, and it's like, bye-bye Netflix. They soon as those rights deals expired, they clawed all those things back. The Big Bang Theory is on, you know, CBS Paramount, and Star Trek is all belonging to the Paramount Plus network. All those franchises, you're right. You don't find them on Netflix anymore. They still have a ton of content. They have more originals than anybody else. But, yeah, they don't have some of those comfort food shows.
But there's risk there now, right? Because those comfort food shows, you knew people would watch. You have a track record to show that there's interest in those. Now that it's your own content, like any studio that makes a movie, you don't know for sure people want that.
Yeah, but if you own the intellectual property, it's still cheaper, to risk that than invent something new. And there's announcements in the last couple of days. I mean, Paramount is launching yet another Star Trek film. Anything they have their rights to and the, contracts with, they're trying. Everybody is just extending those franchises, rolling them out into animated versions and kids versions, and Disney's doing the same with everything that's something to do with Marvel or Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happened. They're just building their franchise castles on their own systems, and that's where you have to go together.
Yeah, I am not I'm not really a Star Wars guy, and I got to tell you, I look at Disney Plus, and I'm like, in another 2 or 3 years, I don't know what's going to be on there for me, because I mean, we're going to now be into the, some spin-off origin story of Obi-Wan Kenobi's grandchildren or something, and like I just, couldn't care less, unfortunately. But you're right. I mean, billions of dollars. It's just become so much more expensive. And Bill, we talked about, I don't know if it was you and I or I talked about it with someone else. I can't remember. It's so ironic, isn't it, that the whole streaming thing started because people wanted to cut the cord and save money and have to be able to pick and choose what they want. And now it's going to cost you more because, if they're paying $17 billion a year for content, prices are going up. And to get all these things, you're going to have to pay more than you ever would have for cable in the first place.
Yeah. And, I think even these studios are getting that people have hit the wall and they're not just automatically sticking with Netflix month after month now. If they go through the menu for 20 minutes and can't find anything they haven't seen or they don't want to see. The other thing that's sort of rising are these ad-supported streaming services. So like Tubi, things like that. And I find they're very inexpensive comparatively. And you can watch a lot of old content there on those channels. Tubi in particular. Oh, you go way back. You can watch old Carol Burnett and Smothers Brothers and Johnny Carson stuff. But they have more recent shows as well. And the only thing is, there's an ad every 7 minutes, just like it was the first time you watched them.
Yeah, and I'll let you go. But, that's really funny because we have changed as because of Netflix, because of the others, because we can PVR stuff. There's a show that is like, it's a stupid show, but I like it and I've watched it on one of the apps. I don't know, Till Death. It was with, what's his name? Who was,
From Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah. Robert, and it's a funny show, but you start watching this and about every 5 minutes, they throw in 4 30-second commercials. And I got to tell you, having not really watched commercials for a long time, man, Bill, 2 minutes is a long time now. All of a sudden, you're like, come on, hurry up. You can't fast forward it. You can't move your scroll over it. It's like, I'm riding this out for 2 minutes. And it's like, okay, times have changed.
It's annoying because they show the same 4 ads every 7 minutes, right? Because they only have 4 sponsors. So you've memorized them by the 3rd break. And it's like, this is, I'm going back to, where's $20? Give me Disney Plus.
Exactly. That is Bill Briou. You can read him at Briou TV, BRIOUX TV. Great stuff. Always great content and great job on the show. Bill, thanks for doing this as always.
My pleasure, Scott. Anytime.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.